Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
Please welcome the great director, Wong Kar-wai.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Well, congratulations. And I'm glad you survived the shoot. It looked like a grueling shoot.
Yeah, it's like we shot for 22 months over 3 years, but it's hard, but it's a lot of fun.
Can you talk about the first scene is so extraordinary, that first action scene. I just was thinking about what that must have been like to film, and I understand that you spent about a month just on that scene. Is that true?
Yeah, because that's the first action scene for Tony. Actually, this is not the first scene we shot in the film. But that's the first scene for Tony, because we shot most of the northern parts before that. And the reason why we have to move to the north, because Tony broke his arms during rehearsal before the first day of shooting. So we have to go to the north in the winter, and we have to shot in the train station scenes. That's a very far away train stations in north, in Shenyang. And we shot there for 2 months. Mm. And each night is like minus 20s. And then after winter, we have to go back to the south, because Tony just recovered. Mm-hmm. And it become summer. And summer in the south, it's extremely hot. So that's why we put some rains there, because okay. Otherwise it would be too hot. And we all know, like, Tony is a very good actor. We know he have been doing like parts in every like range, but this is his first action film, kung fu film, so called. And I think for most of the audience, they will consider like, well, we all know Tony is a very good actor, but can he fight? So this is the question. So we have to make it right, and Tony is like over ready. He's like dying to do these scenes, because this is something that he wants to prove to himself that he can make it. And so we have this action scene, but he always wants to know, like, at the end, who's going to fight with him. And I said, well, you will know by then. I'm not going to tell you. So the first day on set, he has to deal with all this the action team. Mm-hmm. And he's having fun, and later, like a few days later, he keep asking who's the guy who's going to be the last one that I'm going to fight with. And I said, well, you know tonight. Mm. And then that night on set, he realized it's Kun Li. He's like the world champion of MMA. And he looked at me, and I look at him, and then and we have to shoot. And because I think it's if he can manage Kun, I think he can manage everything. And I think he did it very nice and very convincing.
I heard he actually broke his arm twice.
Yeah.
That he, because he broke it and then decided he was...
It become a habit, you know. The problem is because he's not like he don't have like a martial art background, and he has to start practicing at the age of 47. And so we have a lot of protection for Tony on set during shooting. So we have like pad and everything, but those pads are actually very hot, and so he always have problems during rehearsal, because during rehearsal there's no pads, or it's more relaxed, and sometimes it's because it's too relaxed, so the accident happens.
I read this, and I'm curious if it's the case, but that you got the idea for this film, or the idea was sparked maybe by seeing a magazine with Bruce Lee on the cover when you were in Argentina doing Happy Together. Is that true? Or is that something?
No, it's basically not the idea, but it's something that reminds me, because I'm a big fan of Bruce Lee, but he died in 1974, mm-hmm. which is 40 years ago. And in 1996, I shot a film called Happy Together in Argentina. And we actually shot in a train station, big train stations in Buenos Aires. And we have a setup. So Cristóbal needs some time to do the setups, the lighting and everything. So I just walk around. And normally I just walk to those magazine stands. Among all these covers, I saw two Chinese faces. One is Chairman Mao, the other one is Bruce Lee. And it's very strange, because among this magazine stores, they have like covers of Ronald Reagan. It's not the president Ronald Reagan, but the Hollywood star, and like Che Guevara and John F. Kennedy. So it's basically it's like a place where you sell like t-shirts for tourists, and it's not for historical students, or no, it's like students of history. It's basically for young people, so you can see that like Bruce Lee is almost like an icon, and I'm very surprised, because it's like almost like 20 years he's passed away, and he still have this charisma. And later on, I went back to Hong Kong. And I have a chance to meet with the family of Yip Man and the Grandmaster. And actually, I'm very curious, we all know Bruce Lee, but who's the one that trains him? Who's his master? Because when we look at all these interviews and books from Bruce Lee, he talked a lot about his master, Ip Man, and basically a lot of his inspirations came from Ip Man. So, I have a meeting with the family, and they show me a home movie. You can find that footage on YouTube now, but at that point, it's basically something like a secret. The home movie actually is 88 millimeters, shot 3 days before he passed away. And you can see in this, because we saw this short film in their living room. They put on a sheet, and then we just project it. And you can see in this short film, the Grandmaster was in his 70s. He was very sick, skinny, almost like a chopsticks. And he's in his pajamas. And what he's doing there, he was actually doing a demonstrations of the Wing Chun dummy combinations. It's very legendary, because it's basically the core technique of the Wing Chun combat style. So, and a lot of people have offered him a lot of money, including Bruce Lee, to ask him to do this demonstration for them. But he said, well, I'm not going to do it for money. If I have to do it, I have to do it to all my students. So when we look at this short film, and during this demonstration, at one point, it become very emotional, because the Grandmaster stopped in front of this the wooden dummy. And we don't see his face, but we actually saw him leaning on this dummy and just stop for a few seconds. It's either he's too tired or he forgot the whole combinations. And I just start thinking why he has to do this at the end of his life. And later on I realized this is what he intended to do. He just kept his promise. He's wanted to keep his technique to the future generations. And I always want to make a Kung Fu film, but there's so many Kung Fu film made before me. And so I have to find my angles. Because of this short film, I find my angles. Because of all the Kung Fu film made before, there's mostly they are about who's the best fighter, or so about the revenge. And because of this short film, I find the angle is about the legacy. There's in the martial art world, there's a saying is you have to keep the fire burned, keep the light burning. And that means you have to carry on to pass your skill to the next generations. And that's a commitment as a martial artist. And it is a commitment because there's, in the long history of Chinese martial art, there's so many great fighters, but only few can be called a grandmaster. To be a grandmaster, you need to have the technique. You need to have the vision. But at the end, most important, you need to have the generosity to share your skill with the future generations.
And there's also a sense that you have of martial arts not being so much about competition, but about a kind of character, spiritual growth. I mean, you seem to have an idea about what's important about martial arts.
In a film, there's a scene with the old grandmaster speaking to his students. It's like, what is the nature of a knife? It's not to kill, but to conceal. I think this is the philosophy of most of the Chinese martial arts artists. Because I spent 3 years on the road to interview many great martial artists. And I realized the more established they are, the more humble they are. Because they, in a traditional sense, martial art is not sports. It's not yoga. It's not something that can give you like long life. It's a weapon. It kills. So they've been very, very careful in saying that, well, it takes 3 years to find a good master, but at the same time, it took more than 3 years to find a good student. Because you have to make sure that you pass on these techniques to the right persons.
How was your approach to filmmaking changed by the fact that you were dealing with historical information? You were dealing with a real person and real information you wanted to convey. You know, you're known as being a filmmaker who's very free in your imagination. So I'm wondering if dealing with the research and preparation you did. I'm just wondering how this might have affected your approach.
Well, I, first of all, I have to tell you that it's like to make this film is for me is like a dream come true. I was grown up on the streets full of like martial arts school, but I was never allowed to practice martial art because in those days, you can imagine those schools. It's not like all this like karate school or like taekwondo dojo today. There's no like big windows, there's no white uniforms. They're normally very dark and mysterious. And they are all, sometimes they associate with triads, so no parents will encourage their kids to practice martial arts. And in a film, there's a scene at the end of the film with the kids standing outside the place where Ip Man taught Wing Chun, and looking intensely inside, full of curiosities. And that kid could be Bruce Lee, and that kid could be me. Mm-hmm. And it is always my dreams. I just want to walk through that door to find out what's so special, what's so mysterious about Chinese martial art. And with this film, I walk past this door, and I find it very, very satisfying.
And could you talk a bit about how the historical backdrop also interested you? Because so many of your films are about transition, you know, historical transition and moving from one period to another, and this is very much has that.
One thing that really intrigued me about the story of Ip Man is not only because he's the master of Bruce Lee, but also his life story. Because first of all, he's not a typical fighter. He's not someone who makes his living by teaching martial arts, or he's not intended to be a martial artist. He was brought up to be a businessman. He came from a very rich family. At that time, it's almost like an aristocratic environment for him. He's an aristocrat. And one thing is, when you look at the life story of Ip Man, he was born in a time when China is still a monarchy. And then he went through the early republics, the civil war, the Japanese invasion, and then the second civil war, and then ended up in Hong Kong, which by then was British colonies. I think when we look at his life story, the time he went through basically is the history of like the early days of our republics.
Hmm. Could you talk about it was somewhat unique in that you sort of at the same time were making two different versions of the film. Could you talk about the different, the edit that we're seeing here, the version is different than the version released throughout China?
Well, it's because we have an obligations to for the American release, we have to commit to make a film not longer than 2 hours, and the international version actually is 2 hours and 7 minutes. Mm. In fact, it is very easy to cut like 7 minutes out of film, but I don't want to do that because I think for each of these versions, they are built in a certain structures which is so delicate that you can't just simply take out a few frames or make it shorter and to present so-called shorter versions. And I have to rebuild the structures to tell the story in a more linear way and to replace some of the scenes with scenes which haven't included in the international versions. And I think for Grandmaster, a version below 2 hours, I think this is the best version.
Yeah. Could you talk about, and then we'll open it up for some questions from the audience, but just your approach to directing the action sequences or the fight sequences, because there's so much revelation of character and drama. The scenes are so precisely worked out and are working on an emotional level in addition to the just kinetic excitement. I mean, you can enjoy them purely as action, but there's so much sort of poetry and drama within the choreography of the fights.
That means it's not exciting?
No, that means it's also... Oh, but poetry means it's not exciting? It means it's more exciting.
No, it's... I still remember the first date I met with Yuan Houping, our action choreographer. We call him Ba Ye, which is because he's much senior than us. And I told him that I want this Kung Fu film to be very authentic. That means we are not going to do something very fancy, no wires, no flyings. Everything has to stick to gravities. And each of the actions, they have to be like honest with the styles. Like if Tony is going to be the Wing Chun master, every move he made has to be Wing Chun. And like Zhang Ji is like, she's a master of Bagua, so she has to be perfect in a Bagua move. So it's very, very complicated in a technical sense, because it's like we are not working only with Yuan Houping and his team, but we also have all the trainers, because the trainer have trained Tony and Ji for 2 years. So they both on set. And sometimes it's very hard to have like the real master on set, because they always said, well, our technique is so good, we are not going to like fight for 15 minutes. It's always one punch. And sometimes it's so fast, you don't see it. And then we have to do something, because we are not going to do something embarrass them. And then we have to start asking them to do this move slowly, and then we're trying to analyze this move and to shoot it in a different way, different speeds, to carry the speed and the power of it.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's take some questions. So just raise your hand. I'll repeat. Just okay, you're ready to go here, so go ahead.
Yet another beautiful Wong Kar-wai. One of the things that struck me so much about this film was the authenticity of it, and that we're seeing martial arts in ways that we haven't seen it previously in other films. But I also find that the Grandmaster title is a little bit deceptive, and you just mentioned that you've spoken to many grandmasters in your research, and so I wondered if while you were doing that research, if you then discovered that Ip Man could be a grandmaster, Zhang Yi's character could be a grandmaster, the old grandmaster was all part of it, and what sort of the cunning of that was. Did the film change in your mind as you were meeting these people?
So that you had encountered many grandmasters in making the film, and the film depicts them. So I guess one question is, the film is called The Grandmaster, but was there consideration of calling it The Grand... grandmasters? What
about
that?
Fact, it's a very good question. It's we went through this process. I can tell you the changes or the metamorphosis of our film titles. At the beginning, we called this film the Grandmaster, because we thought it's going to be about Yip Man. And then later on, we felt like, well, it's more than just, it's not only about Yip Man. There's so many grandmasters in the film. So we call the film The Grandmasters. But at the end, when we finish the film, when I look at the film, it is advice from my son, actually. He said, well, I don't think you should call this film The Grandmaster, because it's like, it's a bit like, not very catchy, not very nice. Because he said, well, he said, you should call the film The Grandmaster, because it's not about the number of grandmasters in the film, but it's really about the state of mind of being a grandmaster. And I think that makes sense. So we changed the title back to Grandmaster. And it seems like the back and forth, but in fact, it shows and us like, well, what process we went through during this, the making this film.
Okay. Okay, all the way in the back?
Should I step forward?
That's fine. We can hear.
You can just scream.
Yeah, feel free.
I'm a big fan of you.
Thank you.
Seeing
it, it's
actually I've
worked for you for several months, like back in 2010, as an artist and in
the Grandmasters. So
how I met you, how excited I am now to see this movie and your city. And
the next question.
Go ahead. One.
Well,
let's start with one and see how it goes.
First one is like,
just lazy. It's honestly, it's true, because it's much easier to have like, because in a way to be graphic, it's like always better to with four words, you know.
Okay, let's hear the second question, because I'm curious. Yeah, I would be wondering all night if we didn't hear. Go ahead.
What? I can't hear you.
I think she...
Honestly, it's not an excuse.
Okay. Something about her film, helping out with her film school application.
Yeah. Yeah? Let's talk afterwards,
okay.
All right?
Okay, anybody else? Right over here.
I'm curious if the film expressed your feelings about where you are at in your age, and so many techniques in filmmaking are, you know, going away. Some of that in this film is like, is it a similar thing filmmaking to martial arts?
Yeah, I still feel like the kid outside of the door in terms of filmmaking. And there's so many things I want to do, and there's I think, well, like today there's so many possibilities. Like you have different medium to express yourself. So it's always like you have to keep the curiosities. It's always like Godard said, it's the first rose and the only rose, right? You have always to be like fresh and curious.
Okay, over here. Yeah.
Just curious about how in this day and age when it seems that great filmmakers such as yourself are having a harder time financing films. You shoot for 22 months, that's amazing. And I'm just curious to know how you could manage the financing for this film if it took a long time to put together, and was it interesting for you to take such a long period of time, and also to shoot in mainland China, which in the north, which I don't believe you ever had before.
So, like I told you, I have the idea to make this film in 1998, and I could finally to make this film, to start making this film in 2007. So the time that we spent, because we have to wait for the finance, and I think it's because we are very lucky because of the growth of the Chinese markets, which enable us to make this film, to be able to raise the finance to make this film. So it took us like 3 years to make this film, but it took us more than 10 years to wait for these projects, to wait for these opportunities.
And the film has already opened in China and been very successful.
Yeah, six months ago.
Yeah. Okay. Over here.
In line with that question, may I ask what the budget was for the movie? We're in the process of budgeting up.
$25 million.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, over here. Yes.
Hi. I have a question about style, actually, and either in terms of cinematography or screenplay writing. How did you see the Kung Fu style as influencing the way you went about this film? So in some ways, like, how did you think about yourself as carrying on the torch or keeping the fire burning, so to speak?
I'm not conscious about style. I think the way you put your camera, why you shot this scene this way, there must be reasons. And for shooting the martial arts scenes, the action scene in this film, it's because I spent so many times on the road and I went through so many demonstrations. And each time I just observe and take notes. And I know if they are going to do these actions, this punch, and what is the mechanisms of the body. It's not only the arms, it's not only the fist, it's the whole coordination of his body. And the way you shoot it, you have to, like, to capture the essence of it. I remember we have a doctor with us during the shoot, and basically he's the doctor of the Chinese martial art, like, national team. He also practiced like Bagua, and when he looked at the first cut of the train station scene, he told me, he said, "Well, I practiced Bagua for 25 years, and this is the first time I felt that someone catch the punch of Bagua," and he feel like, well, it's almost like in a very hot summer day have a ice Coca-Cola. That's exactly what he told me.
Okay, over here.
Do you have any intention of creating another Kung Fu movie, or maybe like create a loosely based trilogy that you have done before based on Kung Fu?
It's possible if we can raise the finance, because it's actually very expensive to shoot an action film if you have to be that precise, you know.
Can you talk a little bit about the sound design? I mean, because we talked about visual style, but it's such an intricate and beautiful sound, you know, use of sound in the film.
He wants every details, you know. So basically, I think for this film, what we have to differentiate mostly is in the north, it's basically all the compositions of the film visually and in terms of sound wise, because in the north basically we are shooting most of the time outdoor. It's like all the framings are like horizontal, and in the south it's basically almost every scene is indoor, and because this in the south, the architecture is very basically is vertical, so we have to frame the shots and to give the sense like it's very indoor, it's very enclosed. So in this film, there's three chapters, and we have to like create different ambience and the way to play with the sound. Like in Hong Kong, it's more urban. And in the north, it's more like a vertical or horizontal. And in the in the south is more like enclosed and vertical, and actually because we have worked with Dolby for a Dolby version for the US release, which was unfortunately we don't have this equipment here, but you will see it in the theaters later on because this is the first time we work with this system, and actually it creates. Because there's so many like 3D pictures visually, but sound-wise, I think that systems is a new experience because you actually can hear the rain is dropping on your head and you can see the snow flying in front of your face. So it's also very, very like interesting experience.
This is a 32-track sound Atmos system.
60, I think.
60, okay. Yes. So
all the speakers is above your head.
Right. So some of the theaters will have that in Manhattan.
Selected
so look out for that when you see the film again. Okay, over there, and then we'll come down here. Go ahead.
I was wondering, because by the time you started making the movie, this would have been the first Iman movie out there, and now there have been, in the last, I guess, 5-7 years, this is like a fifth one. And I'm wondering what your reaction was when this whole Iman craze started in Hong Kong. And how it affected, if at all, the way you were making the movie, given that Iman was everywhere.
First of all, I want to say something about the situation of traditional martial arts today. In China today, Chinese martial art exists in two forms. One is called competitive martial arts, which is supported by the states, by the governments. There's no school. Basically, it's like a combination of different skill. And so it's considered as sports. It's for the Olympics. And the so-called traditional Chinese martial arts mostly exists in private or by individuals. And I remember during my research, I went to a small town in the center of China, and I'm looking for a very famous masters, Xing Yi masters. And it was in a very cold winter morning, it's snowing, 5 o'clock. I went to a train stations, and I found this masters there. He was training with his students, around 30 of them, and the youngest of his students is 55, because they can only focus on this arts when they retired. So, in fact, during these 3 years, I've been like meeting with all these great martial artists, and they've been very, very generous to and supportive to share all these techniques, experience, and some secrets of the skill to me, because they want and they assume this film will bring some awareness to the younger generations about the situation of the traditional Chinese martial arts today. And even though there's so many films about Ip Man made after we announced the pictures, but I don't think that's a problem. And actually, I think it's good to have more films like this to bring the awareness to the audience, to our younger generations about like, well, we have to take care and we have to pay attention and we have to support the traditional Chinese martial art, because this is today we are talking about the modernization of China. But I don't think the modernization of China is merely the westernization of it. It's time for us to revisit some of our heritage. And I think Chinese martial art basically is not only just a weapon, not a combat skill, but there's certain wisdoms and philosophies which is so valuable to us today. So I don't have any problem if there's so many films about Ip Man. I think it's a good thing, and I wish there would be more, not only about Ip Man, but more about like traditional Chinese martial arts. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay, just take a few more. So down here.
Yeah, I was interested in finding out, compared to your past films and how you go about telling the stories visually and was this film? It seems a lot more complicated to do with such a large-scale action film. And it's not just an action film. I still see the elements of the last films, like stylistically, but it still seems here that it would be a lot more complicated to go with that past style that you had.
Yeah, it can take hours to talk about this. But I just give you an example. Today, this morning, I read a book. It's talking about making foods, right? And they said there's a it's basically more. I don't see much difference from making a film. He said when you're making a food, there's words called amplitude. So if the food is good, it is high in amplitude. And high in amplitude means the ingredients work so well and so well balanced that it becomes an experience so unique that you cannot isolate like the single elements of it. Hmm. It's like Coca-Cola. It's like it's so well balanced, it's Coca-Cola, right? So to make a film, I think the goal is like this. You don't think too much about this and that. And you just put it together, and at a certain point, what you want is experience like that. It's so well balanced. You won't be so conscious about like what is that shot, what is that color, what is that costume, what is that acting. It gives you an experience, or it gives you an aftertaste. When you walk out of cinema, you have something to chew on.
That wasn't a product placement, that answer, right?
Could you comment on that? You know, what does that mean? You know, to connect Homer with.
I can't change overnight. I'm still that person. So it's like there's certain things that still matters to me.
I want to make sure we could talk. We haven't mentioned Z's performance. Which is so amazing. Could you talk about
her? And you promised this your part. You're going to talk like 5 minutes about G's performance.
I promise that?
Yes.
No, your turn. Go ahead. She was great. What was...
Yeah, I think it's like... as you can see, it is not easy for Tony, but it's even hard for G because she don't have any martial arts background. So when you have a chance, check it out on YouTube about the making of this film. You can see what kind of training she went through. And in fact, in this film, she's not only doing like a woman who kick ass. It's not just like a kung fu girl. Because in this film, she also have to have the elegance and the quality of the woman's in the Republic's times, because when the Qing dynasty was overthrown, there's great men, but also there's great women from all walks of life. They are like opera singer, they are martial artists, they are intellectual, and they want to have their own life. They don't want to be like a stereotype. They don't want to be a good wife, just a good wife or a good mother. They want to have their career. They all want their own ambitions. And I think Zhang Ji, the character of Gong Er basically is a combination, is a symbol of that quality. And I think Ji did a very good job.
Okay, I just have time for one more. So who has a great last question? Over here? Yeah.
Thank you very much. I have watched both versions of this, the Grandmaster. So the question is, will you be considering other versions of the Grandmaster in the future? The rumor is they might be making a 4-hour version of this.
I have only 2 hours, so the other two, you have to make it in your mind, you know, in your imaginations.
And if you watched it illegally, you can give Wong his $5 now that he should get, you know.
That's the deal. okay, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.